Hello, and welcome to episode 43 of the DFA podcast. I'm your host, Brian Grosnick. Joining me today, our first show of the new year, is our producer and sometime co-host, Sean Brody. Sean, how's it going, man?
Good. It's a great way to start 2018.
Yeah. We miss having RJ around for the first show of the new year, so that takes a little bit of some of the shine off our first podcast, but we got some stuff to talk about, and that's exciting. So far, 2018 seems slightly better than 2017. I mean, it's probably been because there's only been a couple of days and only one, you know, like tweet threatening nuclear war and all of us dying. So, I mean, so far so good, right?
Yeah, it's starting out in DFA officially 2 years, two calendar years now. So moving up.
Yeah, we're going to have to do something special for our first anniversary. I have no idea what that'll be. Maybe we'll do one of our own transactions and we'll trade me away to a different podcast for like somebody with more talent and more insight. That would be a good thing to do. Or maybe we can add a free agent or something like that. We should come up with something fun for the one anniversary show.
We're signing Eric Hosmer. That's what's going on.
I mean, at this point, we might have the inside track. I think we can give him 7 years comfortably. So that would be a pretty good idea, I think. So there has been a lot of time since our last podcast, but not a whole lot of moves. There's still a lot of the top free agents are still available, like the aforementioned Eric Hosmer, Yu Darvish, Mike Moustakas, Lorenzo Cain, Jake Arrieta, Alex Cobb. These guys are all still on the free agent market. So we don't have quite as much to talk about as we might have expected to start the year.
Yeah, we did our planning doc, I believe, like a couple days before Christmas, and about nothing happened in the course of 2 weeks, which is pretty much how this offseason has went so far.
Yeah, we can get into if this keeps up for a couple more days. Maybe at the end of the week, we'll have a podcast where we talk about, you know, some potential landing spots and what the offseason as a whole kind of means. But for today, we'll run down some of the deals that have been made since our previous show, which was at the end of 2017, which seems so long ago. We'll start with the biggest move that I think's happened since that time, which is the Tampa Bay Rays trading away the greatest player in franchise history, it looks like, in Evan Longoria. Longoria's heading to the Giants, and coming back in return to the Rays are infielder Christian Arroyo, outfielder Denard Span, left-handed pitching, I'm going to use air quotes, prospect Matt Crook, and right-handed pitching, air quotes, prospect Stephen Woods. The Rays will also be paying about $15 million to the Giants, and they will cover all of Denard Span's $13 million contract, which is kind of a bear. So this is a really big deal for the Rays, I think. It's kind of a big deal for the Giants. It's Evan Longoria. He's a name brand superstar, and the Giants, you know, kind of missed out on Giancarlo Stanton. They may or may not have missed out on Ohtani. I don't know how close they were. So this is their big move so far. So what do you kind of think about it, Sean?
Yeah, it's kind of weird. I never imagined Evan Longoria to actually get traded. I thought it was just posturing, honestly. And when I saw the deal break, it's a bit surprising. It's where the Rays are. I do think that it doesn't mean that they want to completely rebuild. Like a Chris Archer probably isn't someone who they'll move, since he's going to be around for like 4 or 5 more years. So I'd be surprised if they moved him or this had anything to do with that. But I do think it's interesting, and the Giants were willing to go for somebody like a Longoria, who you don't know, you could be getting the back end of that deal where he's not the same player he was. But it was an aggressive move. I think Denard Span is going to be the underlooked portion of this trade. But yeah, you wrote the TA. What do you got?
So I think this is really interesting for the Rays. It's less interesting for the Giants, because I think the Giants kind of traded, you know, what's going to be a sure thing over the long term, or I wouldn't say a sure thing, but maybe a cost-controlled, useful piece for the long term in Christian Arroyo, who's obviously the big ticket going back to Tampa, for a player who is older, shorter-term contract. You know, Arroyo's got, I think, 6 years left available of team control, whereas Longoria ends his deal in 2022. So he's got maybe 5-ish years plus the option on there. He's more expensive, but I think he's kind of the upside pick here, because there's the thought that he will start hitting better than he did in 2017. I mean, in 2017, he was basically a league average or slightly worse hitter. And you don't usually trade a lot of talent to get a league average or slightly worse hitter at a position where you've already got a young player who could be that himself. So it's interesting for the Giants, but the Giants have this philosophy, and they have since they've started their dynasty, where they do try to bring in veterans. And I think the veteran leadership that Longoria will provide to the team is something that they really want and they're looking for. And this is a guy who's like a 2-4 win player over the last couple of years, after being like kind of an all-star 5-6-7 win player before that. So it's not like it's out of the realm of possibility that a guy who's 32 years old might have something of a return to form year this year, especially, you know, kind of one of those change of scenery things. Maybe he's a little rejuvenated. It didn't sound like he was really thrilled with the way things were going down in Tampa, despite having spent his whole career there. So I think Longoria is a good-ish bet for kind of a rebound season this year. You're right, at the end of the contract, it could start to look ugly. He may be a first baseman at that point, although his defense has maintained, he's maintained good defensive numbers over the years, even as his offensive production has dipped a little bit. I don't hate this trade for the Giants, for sure, because Arroyo is still kind of an unknown quantity. But at the same time, I kind of hate it for the Rays. This is definitely a move that is a money ball move for the Rays. They have such a low payroll that they are always looking to get long-term value at a low price at the expense of giving up their veterans, their players who have had more historical cachet, whether it's Carl Crawford, whether it's David Price. They always have to trade their stars. It's something that they've done for their entire career. I thought Evan Longoria was going to be an exception, and he has kind of a unique role with the Rays where he's been really representative of this team's rise from 2008, where they made the World Series, to now. They used to be a laughingstock, and now they're much less of a laughingstock. They got a book written about them by Jonah Carey, and they made the World Series, and they were competitive for a long time despite the low payroll. And Longoria may not be the type of player that a team like that really wants to have on the books, but he's so representative of that era of Rays baseball. He's so representative of the, you know, the love that's come out from the fan base, that I really do think this is kind of a blow to the fans, even if maybe you could kind of see it being a good baseball decision. It's another one of those like Wall Street, very surgical, very sterile moves that this team makes from time to time, where they add a player who maybe isn't well-liked, they remove a player who maybe is well-liked, and it's just all about dollars per war almost, or like getting the most value for the least amount of cash.
Well, yeah, and they've always been this team, they've always done this stuff, and I thought Longoria would be the one thing that stayed, and he was going to be one guy that was going to begin as Ray and go into whatever kind of Hall of Fame conversation he will have as Ray. I don't think that'll change still. You can obviously retire or sign like a one-day contract and go back to being Ray, but the fact that they did move him says a lot. And if you're a free agent who looks at the Rays as a landing spot, which I don't know why you do that, but if you were, I would look at this deal and say, wow, Longoria meant everything to that franchise. Mm-hmm. And then they dropped him towards the end of his deal. So are they going to do the same with me? I think if you're a free agent signing with the Rays, you probably already know that, and you're already signing a short deal. Right. But that's the thing. Longoria, like you said, he's not bad. He hasn't been particularly terrible, but it's the guy. It's that man that you think of when you think of the Tampa Bay Rays.
I know before you wanted to talk a little bit about Denard Span going back to the Rays. So do you want to talk a little bit about what that kind of means? Because I see it as kind of a salary dump.
Yeah, you get Denard Span back, who played very well last year. He didn't play great defensively. He's never been super defensively, but he slots in well for that team. He's a good lefty bat. It gives them quite a few lefties in that lineup, if we're being honest. It's Denard Span, Kevin Kiermaier, Corey Dickerson, Miller, Joey Wendell, and then on the bench you got Micah Johnson, Malik Smith. So quite a few lefties in Tampa.
Yeah, that was actually kind of a worrying thing for me, because I'm kind of surprised that with Corey Dickerson, so he's not going to be a platoon option for Corey Dickerson because he's a lefty. He's not going to be a replacement for Malik Smith because he's a lefty. he's not going to be a guy who I would think would block Jake Bowers because he's a lefty. So I don't really see how he fits on this team. I feel like this is the year for Bowers. Like, Bowers is going to have to come in and try to hit this year. It doesn't make sense to keep him at AAA much longer, and Bowers probably fits better as an outfielder, at least to start, than a first baseman, where right now, I guess, Brad Miller's penciled in to play first base, and he's a lefty. So for me, Span seems to be kind of a blocker for some of these guys. Like, you know, he does things very, he has a very different skill set than Malik Smith, who's defense and no bat, versus Span, who's kind of bat and no defense at this point. So I'm kind of confused by what they're going to do with him if they keep him on and as regular. That's why to me this always seemed like a salary dump. Yeah, he actually hit at rate values better than like Evan Longoria last year. So there's a value in having him. He's a weird fit for this roster. And now that leaves this roster with the only right-handed hitters who are going to slot into the everyday lineup right now are Steven Souza, Wilson Ramos, who's kind of a question mark, may have to play some DH, Adeni Hechavarria, who's not really a hitter at all, and maybe Matt Duffy, if Matt Duffy can stay healthy. They've really got to address their infield. You know, maybe Duffy's going to take over at third base, which is really weird that the Giants and Rays have swapped third basemen like a couple of ways now. Duffy being the old third baseman for the Giants a couple of years ago. I do think Arroyo is going to step into that role relatively quickly. And Arroyo's a right-hander, so that's great and everything. But I'm a little nervous about Arroyo given his short-term showing in San Francisco last year. He's basically a hit tool guy, where you expect him to draw a small number of walks, but he also didn't strike out very often in the minor leagues. But in 135 plate appearances with the Giants last year, he struck out a lot more than usual. He had a terrible showing. Sure, it could be first-time jitters. He had an equally impressive showing when he was in AAA with the Giants last year. But he's never really been a blow-the-doors-off kind of offensive prospect. So there's, to me, it seems like the bust rate's kind of high on this guy. If there's a chance that prospect evaluators and scouts have been maybe slightly misjudging his hit tool, which is one of the hardest things to judge when you come in there. So it really seems like this could be kind of a feast or famine guy for the Rays. I don't really see how this team makes them better for 2018. I don't really see how this makes the team better for 2019. It's going to be one of those things where Arroyo is going to be basically the only thing that drives whether or not this was a good deal.
Well, and you're right. They still have prospects down there as well. They have Willy Adames. They have Jake Bowers. Guys who are close. They're thought of as highly touted prospects. Now you have Christian Arroyo, who's middle infield. Willy Adames, middle infield. And you forgot to mention another lefty that they signed that is also on their team now, and that's Ryan Schimpf. So
I didn't really forget to mention Ryan Schimpf as much as I do not care. I deeply do not care about Ryan Schimpf. Right now, it's like either he or Joey Wendell is going to be the strong side of a platoon at second base, which is like, that's horrible. That's really terrible. Like, I have 0% faith in that being anything other than a disaster. I've been wrong before, but yeah, that doesn't make sense.
Well, no, you're right. But they are positioned kind of well for the future, and for sort of a short-term retooling rebuild, they have prospects who are close. You can easily see them slotting in the middle infield, and Matt Duffy, Adeni Echevarria is probably not long for that spot, but yeah, it's they're close. They're not, like, on it, but it's not going to be like a typical Rays tear-down rebuild like we've seen. So it'll be interesting to see how it looks. Like I mentioned kind of at the top, I don't see them trading Chris Archer unless they get absolutely just blown away and they get a Chris Sale type offer. But I don't see them moving Chris Archer for that sole fact.
Yeah, I think that the Rays are smart about how they value their players in terms of their value versus their contract. They know that Archer's extremely valuable because his contract is so small. So they're not in a position with him where they have to bail on him because he's making $17 million a year, like, you know, kind of like how they did with David Price. So I'm sure you're right. I'm sure that they will trade Chris Archer when they're good and ready to do it, if they get the offer with the premium prospect, you know, get back somebody equivalent to an Eloy Jimenez or Yoan Moncada type level of prospect. I don't know who that'll end up being, and it seems like a lot of the top overall prospects right now are guys on teams who it doesn't make sense for them to swap them out for a Chris Archer type. Like, for example, like the Braves are not going to trade for Ronald Acuna for Chris Archer. That doesn't seem to make any sense. The Blue Jays are not in a position to contend, so why would they trade a Bichette or a Guerrero for Archer? So I don't see that being kind of the move yet. Maybe we're a year out from an Archer trade or something like that. I mean, the Rays aren't stupid. They're not going to let him walk for nothing, but he's got the two option years after 2019, so we can be kind of patient with that. I don't see this as a really compelling rebuild for the Rays at this point. They seem to me a lot like the Athletics, which is fair because they're two teams that get compared a lot between their lack of payroll and their analytics expense, but it seems like one of those things like where the Athletics kind of retool a little bit and make themselves, I think it was Sam Miller or Craig Goldstein that said that they make themselves like 50% cheaper but 10% worse, and it never really gets to the point where they're able to contend for a wild card spot. And they kind of have to just wait for this superstar level prospect that hasn't seemed to come through for them for a while. So I'm not really thrilled by this, and I don't know how you get out of it without an influx of either cash or getting really lucky in the draft, and neither of those things are really things to plan for on the horizon.
Well, we've seen them talk about in the past moving from the Trop would help, but you have to wonder how much that would actually help them, if that would really increase their market size. It's not going to be a fun year, not going to be a fun few years to be a fan of a team in Florida. Unfortunately, I guess, but yeah, it's something.
So let's, I think that covers most everything we wanted to talk about for the Giants-Rays trade. It should be fun to see Evan Longoria, see if he gets a little rejuvenated in his new location. And let's talk about another guy going to a new location in the National League West. The other big deal from like the Christmas break, I would say, into the new year has been the Rockies acquiring Wade Davis to be their team's new closer, which is kind of shocking because I thought they had already acquired all of their bullpen pieces that they were going to go and get. They signed Brian Shaw. They re-signed Jake McGee. It seemed like they had built the foundation of a pretty good bullpen and spent a lot of money on it. And now they've signed Wade Davis, which is the foundation of a pretty good bullpen and totally spending a lot of money on it. He's gotten the big contract for reliever this offseason, 3 years and $52 million with a vesting option for a fourth season for the player. It's about $17.5 million in annual value, which is a record among relievers. This is not money you pay to somebody, especially a closer, unless you think they're really going to make a powerful difference in terms of their moving the kind of the scale for you on the win curve. I think it's a really bold move by the Rockies. I don't think it's a bad decision. I think this is a good signing, especially when paired with bringing back McGee and bringing in Brian Shaw. Yeah, $50 million a year is a ton to spend on your bullpen. But the Rockies are going for it, and of all the places where they could improve, the bullpen might have been their best bet. So I kind of really like this deal. How about you?
Oh, yeah. No, I love the Rockies going for it, and I love them signing Wade Davis. It's not bullpening, per se. I think it's more of just realizing that if you make a strong bullpen, that's one less area you have to worry about. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't say it's getting relievers to take away innings from their starters. But yeah, Wade Davis, Jake McGee, Brian Shaw, Adam Ottavino even, it is a very nice bullpen for them. And it's interesting to see them going in on their pitching, unlike Rocky teams we've seen in the past. And Wade Davis in particular is interesting because if you think about from 2014 to 2016, he only gave up like three home runs. Mm-hmm. And so he's not a super home run prone guy. And I mean, he gave up six last year, but it'll be interesting to see if he can keep it at a low level in Colorado, given that park. And it's interesting. He was obviously the best reliever on the market, obviously the best guy you could sign for this role. And I think he's deserving of getting as much annual value as he got and beating Chapman's record.
Yeah, he's a good pitcher. The home run thing does kind of worry me a little bit. He was very home run prone as a starter, which is kind of a lifetime ago, so I don't want to put too much stock in that. But the thing about his crazy home run numbers, you know, 2014, he gave up no homers. 2016, he gave up no homers. 2015, he gave up three homers. So three homers over three seasons in Kansas City as the everyday kind of shutdown relief guy. Kansas City and Colorado, in terms of home runs, are about as different as you can get. Mm-hmm. And so he goes to Chicago last year, gives up six home runs. Good number. I think that's a very good number for a closer. It's about one per nine innings. Perfectly fine for a reliever of Davis's caliber who gets all these strikeouts, has a little bit of a control issue, but not so much. But you saw his FIP was a little higher than usual, even though his ERA was still small enough to be an elite reliever. So I have a little bit of nervousness about that in Colorado. That having been said, even if he gives up more home runs, he's still a really good back of the bullpen reliever. And if he can supplement the home runs by maybe, you know, trimming his walk rate a little bit or inching up his strikeout rate a little bit, then I think that there's no reason to think that he's going to be a bust or he's going to be all of a sudden an average seventh inning guy. I think he's going to be a good foundational closer for this team. And if you look at the roster in Colorado, now they really kind of look to me like a legitimate, we should expect this team to win the wild card sort of team. They're not deep, but their starting eight in the field is really good. I think the Chris Iannetta acquisition is underrated. I don't know who's going to play first base yet, and I'm not sure they do either because there's still some first base options on the market that might be worth bringing in, but a Ryan McMahon, Ian Desmond kind of sort of platoon with Ramiel Tapia playing the outfield when Desmond goes to first base, that could be pretty good. I think that could provide some decent value, and the top of their lineup is so talented that it really does look like this team could make some waves, and you know we could kind of expect them to win 86, 88 games again next year.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. This is a team that did nothing but improve. And they were already a good team that kind of faltered at the end, but they didn't ever fall off a cliff. Mm-hmm. It makes a ton of sense to just go in there and bolster your bullpen. Wade Davis has got to do it. I don't think they're done. I think they have some moves that they could still make. I think they can sign a couple guys. But
I would really like to see them go out and get a veteran starter. It may not be a particularly good one. I'm not saying they need to go out and get Arrieta or Cobb or something like that. Mm-hmm. But just because their rotation is made up of such younger players and almost all of them have had some sort of injury issue or like, you know, Chad Bettis is like tentatively penciled in as the number two guy. But because of his issues, he only had like 50 innings last year, and then you got other guys like Tyler Anderson, who's not had a lot of burn. John Gray is still kind of working his way up. It would be really helpful, I think, for them to go out and get somebody who can eat some innings. Not like Jason Vargas, because they got lefties and they don't want a homer-prone guy, but if there's a guy on the market who can keep the ball down a little bit, I would actually really love to see them go out and give Ubaldo Jimenez a contract and bring him back. I think that would be a fun story, and he's the type of depth piece that this team would probably benefit from.
Yeah, and I do wonder about this when it comes to free agency. You saw kind of reports coming out that they were in contention with another team, and then at one point just said, screw it, we're going in, and just pushed all of the cards to the table and went high for Wade Davis. So I wonder, when they're signing pitchers, do you have to overpay for the stigma of playing in Coors, or do you think that if they went out and signed like a Yu Darvish or a big line starter, that they would just be paying what everybody else would have been paying, or do they have to go above and beyond?
I bet they probably have to go above and beyond, because even if it's not that, you know, Denver's actually a pretty cool place to live, so I think there's some value in that. But I think that every pitcher worth their salt probably knows that if they go to Colorado, yeah, people are going to give them a little bit of a pass because it's so notorious as a hitter's park. But at the same time, it seems to be really difficult to adapt to that, and your raw numbers are probably going to suffer playing in Colorado, and that might mean that you'll make less money in the future making that move. Like, you kind of got to get your money up front, I think, if you're going to Colorado, because there's a not a small chance that you're not going to make as much money as if you would have signed with the Padres and or the Mariners or another team where your raw numbers are going to just look a little bit better at the end of your time with that team.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that. That was in line with what I was thinking. So my next question to you is, the Diamondbacks have signed a couple of relievers. The Rockies have signed a couple of relievers. Who's going to get the first wildcard spot if they were to both make it again?
Well, I still like the Diamondbacks more than I like the Rockies coming into next year. And this is going to be like a continuing theme with me, I think, is that I really strongly believe in the power of your stars. And the Rockies have a couple of no doubt talented, really good stars on their team. They've got Nolan Arenado and they've got Charlie Blackmon. And those guys are legit. The Diamondbacks have Paul Goldschmidt, and they've got A.J. Pollock. And if I had to pick between those pairs of two, I'd probably lean on the side of the Rockies a little bit. But the Diamondbacks also have Zach Greinke. The Diamondbacks also have Robbie Ray. The Diamondbacks also have Archie Bradley. And when you look at them as kind of a cohesive unit, I think they have a comparative, close to the same level of talent in their starting lineups, but I kind of like the Arizona rotation a little bit better. I kind of like some of the guys that they've got on the bench a little bit better in Brandon Drury. I kind of like some of the guys they've got. The bullpen I would probably give overall to Colorado at this point, but we'll talk about it a little bit more. But the Diamondbacks haven't been slouches about adding some dudes to the bullpen. I don't think either team's done either. Like you said, like, sure, it's possible the Rockies will make a move, but it's also kind of possible that the Diamondbacks will go out and maybe make a move to re-sign J.D. Martinez, maybe bring somebody else in. So I kind of lean towards the Diamondbacks, but I think it's pretty close at this point.
I like the Diamondbacks more. I still think they're better suited. If you were to put a win total on the Diamondbacks and a win total on the Rockies, what are they?
88 for the Diamondbacks, 85 for the Rockies, something like that. I don't think it's going to be particularly... I think the National League wild card this year is going to be really interesting because I feel like the Cardinals, the Rockies, the Diamondbacks are the three teams to beat. And maybe I put the Brewers at the fringes of that. And I think it's going to be a dogfight between those teams. So I think it's going to be really interesting to see. The Rockies and the Diamondbacks, I think, are kind of a little bit behind the eight ball because that National League West does seem pretty competitive right now. Like, I don't think the Giants are going to be nearly as bad as they were last year. The Padres are kind of a mess still. But that's a tough division to play in, especially with the Dodgers at the top of it. So we'll stick with the Diamondbacks. We're going to blow through a lot of smaller moves that have been made. And the first one, I think, would be good to kind of stick around with the Diamondbacks a little bit. So we talked a little bit about their bullpen. Let's talk a little bit about one of the guys they signed.
Yeah, the Diamondbacks signed Yoshihisa Hirano from Japan. 2 years, $6 million. Was one of the best closers of the past couple years and really just a very good pitcher. So their bullpen adding another piece, and they already had a pretty decent bullpen. You look at what it was last year, the Archie Bradley. They didn't have Brad Boxberger, but they had Randall Delgado. Andrew Chafin was really good. And yeah, what's the takeaway here?
So for me, this is a good addition to a bullpen that needed a couple of good additions. He's a low-cost guy to bring in. He was only something like, I think, $6 million over 2 years. Thanks to Kaz Yamazaki, who is providing the transaction analysis for this at Baseball Prospectus, I know that he is 13th all-time in saves in NPB, which is – that's actually something. And he also is another splitter guy, like a lot of the guys coming over from Japan. So it's always going to be interesting to see how that plays, especially in a place like Arizona, where you can get a little homer prone, that kind of thing. Velocity is doing okay for this guy. So he's older, like most Japanese relievers that come over to America. I'd expect him to be a relatively worthwhile seventh inning guy. I think it'd be silly to kind of think of him as one of those guys who could come in and maybe be a ninth inning stopper, but good addition for a team that needed, depth in their bullpen.
I do find it interesting his kind of stuff. Kaz notes, as you said, he stays about around 91 to 85 miles an hour, so he doesn't throw particularly hard for what major league level is, but I have seen stuff written up about his splitter being absolutely devastating. So kind of interesting. Would love to see how this is going to go for the Diamondbacks. I do agree with you that he's probably as big of an upside pick as you can find in the free agency. So, yeah.
And the other thing is, he might be one of those guys, if the splitter is as good as advertised, he might be one of those guys who really crushes it first time through the league. And then as people start to pick up a scouting report on him, you might see a need for adjustments, or you might see offensive numbers against him pick up. So I'll be really interested to see how he gets off to a start to the season and see if there's something there.
So I think for the next one, I'm going to go with the one that you love the most, and that's Julius Chacin to the Brewers. two years, $15.5 million. So, I'll let you run with this one.
Yeah, Julius is my dude, and I've constantly now for the last like two or three years been talking him up as a legit middle-of-the-rotation starter, and last year was his best season by far ever. He threw 32, made 32 starts, reliable. It doesn't strike out a ton of guys, but he keeps the ball down. He keeps it in the park. He gets ground balls. He is like a perfectly reasonable middle-of-the-rotation starter that you can kind of set and forget and rely on. And the Brewers really needed that. Now, I think the Brewers needed an ace more than they need a middle-of-the-rotation guy, because I really am concerned about Jimmy Nelson. And I guess this makes, I don't know, it's not Matt Garza who's the number one starter for the Brewers. I mean, who would you put on their staff as their stopper, their staff ace? You can get away with having a lot of good starting pitchers, and, stats are stats, and I would much rather have five good starting pitchers than an ace and four jokers. But Chase Anderson is probably the guy at the top of this rotation for now. And they still, if I were them, adding Chacin, adding Yovani Gallardo on a minor league deal, they've got to get somebody who can hold down the fort, I think. I really would be disappointed if they don't go out and get Cobb or Darvish or Arrieta at this point.
Well, they struck gold with Chase Anderson last year. He pitched very, very well for them. He got injured towards the end of the season, but yeah, he was magnificent for them.
He was, but he got injured at the end of the season.
Yeah, and Yuli Chacin, I think, makes sense from the fact that one of their weaknesses last year was that they didn't really have any mid-to-back guys that were decent. Like you said, they had Matt Garza, Junior Guerrero, Giovanni Gallardo. So you're kind of going with not Giovanni Gallardo. Let me start that over. And Chase Anderson was very, very good last year. He was a bit of a surprise, but I mean, he pitched very well for them, and I think that one of the weaknesses last year was the back end of that rotation, so getting Chacin to kind of shore up that 3-4 slot, so you're not running out someone who's a Matt Garza type and just kind of hoping that you can outscore the other team on any given or on that day, it makes sense, and I think you're right, they do need to go out and sign someone who's a bit of a bigger name. I think like a Lance Lynn or somebody who's not going to be super expensive, is a lefty, and you could sign for about 3 years would be the guy that you'd get. But there's aspects to like about it. I like Chacin. They definitely needed someone of his caliber, of his type, to kind of fill out this rotation. But if you're going into the next season with Chacin as your big signing, you're not going to have a good time.
Yeah. And again, like, great deal. I think the price was definitely right. I think some people were a little surprised that he got almost $16 million for 2 years. I don't think that's out of character for what he should be getting on the open market. I still think it's going to be a fine value. But yeah, you're right. They need to make another move still if they really want to go for it in terms of 2018 making a push for the wild card. We'll see if that's something that's in the cards for him.
Well, I don't think people realize how good he was last year with the Padres. And by people, I mean myself.
Yeah.
Because I did not realize how good he was.
He was really good. He was really, really good. He had a DRA of 4.13, which is much better than league average. It's worth about 3 wins by Baseball Prospectus's metrics. So that's pretty darn solid. And a 3.89 ERA. So it's not just the advanced metrics. He like literally stopped guys from scoring.
He was back to striking out guys at about a 20% rate for the first time since he came into the league in 2009-2010. Mm-hmm. Not like an incredible upside pick, but he does have some upside there.
Yeah. So we are about to pick up the pace a little bit, and we're going to roll through some of the other signings. What do you want to give me in terms of first baseman?
Oh, God. Let's start with Yonder Alonso to Cleveland, just because... Why not? 2 years, $16 million, with a year 3, $8 million vesting option that has a $1 million buyout. So, all those words mean Yonder Alonso is replacing Carlos Santana.
That's not fair. That's not nearly the replacement that I would have wanted if I were at Cleveland. Now, given the guys that are available on the free agent market, I think Alonso's a nice fit. He doesn't cost very much. I want to talk about this kind of in conjunction with another signing, which is Mitch Moreland to the Red Sox. 2 years and $13 million, you've got to be kidding me that these guys received almost the same amount of money. Like, I don't see this as being equal value in these two guys at all. Alonso, after last year, I think is a much better offensive player. The defense is not different enough to make a difference to me. The fact that these two guys got roughly the same contract is, to me, an indictment of the Red Sox front office compared to the Cleveland front office, because I would much rather have Alonso and his power upside than Mitch Moreland and his doubles. I don't really know what else he's bringing to the table here. If I were a Red Sox fan, I'd be really disappointed that they couldn't spend an additional $3 million to go out and get somebody like Alonso. Or, you know, there are guys who are still on the market, like Logan Morrison and Lucas Duda, who probably could provide the same amount of value, and they haven't signed yet. Maybe they could be had for Mitch Moreland money.
Well, if Lucas Duda signs for Mitch Moreland money, I think we need to go to the Will Pone's home and just absolutely burn it to the ground. No, don't do that. But yeah, Yonder Alonso is better than Mitch Moreland, but I think the whole point of signing Mitch Moreland for the Red Sox was that they wanted somebody who could give them an ability to still sign J.D. Martinez. You saw they have a 5-year offer out there for him, but $3 million isn't that much to them.
Yeah.
In practice, but I think that they're over here trying to get under the soft cap, whatever you want to call it, so that they don't get penalized and they can go chase Bryce Harper or chase somebody next year. I don't like it. Don't agree with it. But yeah, when they signed Mitch Moreland, you saw them start to float out there that they were going to try to move Hanley, try to move that money to get them under the limit, and they could still sign J.D. Martinez. I think that's realistic. I think them saving $3 million on Yonder Alonso just for the fact that they can sign J.D. Martinez would be interesting, but you actually have to sign J.D. Martinez then. So,
well, yeah, and the thing is, like, $3 million, the Red Sox can find that money in another fashion. I mean, not only does Dombrowski have it and probably his couch cushions at this point, it's not like this is a team that couldn't get out from a Brock Holt, or they couldn't, you know, clear some cash for some of these other guys that are on the roster. It doesn't make sense to me if you're making that kind of move to do it over $3 million, and they have dudes that they can package with other dudes to drop $3 million if they need to.
Do you think that, since we're kind of packaging Alonso and Moreland together, do you think that at the end of the day, Hanley's going to get moved?
No, I don't think anybody wants to take that contract. Unless the
I would agree.
Unless the Red Sox have some sort of idea of packaging some cash, and packaging some prospect stuff along with them, but I don't see any team that would want to make that deal. It doesn't make sense for most teams to try to take on Hanley Ramirez at this point because he hasn't proven himself to be a super effective hitter over the last year.
Okay, so we'll move on now. We have two injuries for you. One's a big one, and the other one's we're a bit bullish on. Zach Britton ruptured his Achilles working out, so that's going to hurt the Orioles. And then the next one is that Martin Perez let me see if I can put this right. Separated or not separated, he fractured a capsule on his shoulder from riding a bull.
Okay, so Martin Perez injury, interesting, kind of funny. Ultimately, not all that important, I think. I mean, yeah, it's a bummer for the Rangers because they were kind of counting on him and they still don't have enough starting pitchers. So that's a serious bummer. Do you know what the prognosis is for Martin Perez going forward?
I believe it was,
his non-pitching shoulder, right?
I believe so. And I believe it was only a couple months, but it probably means that they're never going to put him in the bullpen again.
Wow. I don't know where to go with this. He also underwent surgery to his elbow, right?
Oh, it was his elbow.
Okay.
I thought it was his shoulder. I thought it was a capsule on his shoulder.
Okay.
But it was his elbow.
It was his non-throwing elbow. So, I mean, it's hilarious that this is, not something that wasn't in his contract or something like that. But, yeah, that's a bummer for that team. The Britton injury really kind of is frustrating for the Orioles, who maybe were trying to slow play a trade for Britton out of Baltimore. And now they can't really get anything back for him until midseason, which may not be the end of the world. I don't know, because his value was so much down after his disappointing 2017 and his injuries then that I don't know they would have gotten anything really useful back for him. And maybe this will give him enough time to recover and he can get some value and they trade him next offseason. Or do they? Because, no, he's out. I think he's a free agent at the end of next year. So maybe that's not even a thing. Yeah, this is going to be a bummer for them. I mean, one way or the other, they either lose a valuable trade chip or they lose a valuable piece of their bullpen. And they couldn't afford to lose a valuable piece of the bullpen or a trade chip at this point.
Well, yeah, and also you see them trying to slow play Manny Machado and how they don't want to move him. They don't get a good offer there, so they'll wait till the deadline. I think losing like that guy at the back end of your bullpen, you almost the writing's on the wall. If you're not going to compete this year, you're not going to compete in the AL East, then just get what you can get. I don't see the point in kind of this will they, won't they, just go in and do it. Then again, it runs with the ownership group.
Yep.
It starts with the top. It starts with every time something has to happen, it has to get approved by the ownership group, and that's the main problem. So your hands are kind of tied as a general manager, but yeah, it would seem like this is a perfect opportunity to do kind of a slow control rebuild, but they're the Orioles.
Yeah, they certainly are. that's a good way of putting it. So let's quickly review a couple of minor moves. Matt Adams went to the Nationals. I like that move for them as kind of the replacement for Adam Lind. I think he can really hit. He's a nice little platoon partner for Ryan Zimmerman. And the value was pretty good. 1 year at $4 million. What do you think?
Yeah, I think it's pretty good. I think that he's a little bit better than $4 million. He was pretty good last year, but I mean, it does seem like an Adam Lind-esque signing, just like you said. The next one, Tommy Valone signing 1 year, $1.2 million. I think the only thing both of us can say about that is that he doesn't actually have to play for the Mets anymore. Yep. He'll be playing against them, so all positives there.
Yeah, just another minor league arm, depth arm, six starter. That's it.
Nick Hundley to the Giants, 1 year, $2.5 million. Anything there?
Necessary evil. I mean, Hundley's a nice little backup catcher. The Giants need a nice little backup catcher for the days that they give Buster Posey a day off, so I like it.
So, Zach Duke, Jared Hughes, Zach Duke Twins, Jared Hughes Reds, anything there?
These are kind of the necessary middle of the bullpen kind of moves that teams have to make. So, yeah, not really exciting, not much to say about them. I think they'll both be perfectly serviceable, slightly better than replacement level guys.
And our final one, we got Chris Young and Tyson Ross going to the Padres. Tyson Ross returning to the Padres. Both minor league deals. Will they see any kind of renaissance, or will Tyson Ross see any kind of renaissance with the Padres?
If I put the over-under for both of them and major league innings this year, I would put the over-under at zero innings, or I guess 0.1, one-third of an inning, and I would take the under.
Jeez.
I do not expect either of them to pitch in the major leagues. It's a bummer. I would really love to see Tyson Ross, and especially Chris Young. Like, that dude, it just lasts forever. So I would love to see both of them make it back. I just don't see it happening.
All right, so I think we're officially caught up. It'll be approximately 3 more weeks before we get our next move, so we'll probably come to you then.
Yeah, thanks so much for listening. You can find DFA Podcast on Twitter, at DFA Podcast. Contact the show, talk to us, let us know what you think. But we will hopefully see you next week. So in the meantime, take care.